It was the Russell Wilson show in Seattle as the Seahawks send the Eagles crashing down to earth, shaking up the top of the NFC. The Vikings smother the Falcons. The Saints take control of the NFC South. Should Gronk be suspended for his cheap shot? And have the Chargers finally arrived? We're breaking down all of Week 13 on the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Hello and welcome to the MMQB 10 Things podcast. I'm Gary Gramling. He is Andy Benoit. It's December football, Andy, and as you know, these games are worth more.
Yeah, that's right. This is a more important podcast than what we did back in September. Those games somehow were less because we forget about them. And Now, you know what's been neat, though? In the NFC, a lot of the big teams are playing each other at the end, just by coincidence. They didn't schedule it that way, but you have Rams, Eagles, I think that's next week. Eagles, Seahawks this week, Vikings, Falcons. Rams played the Saints last week, Saints, Panthers. There's a lot of competitive games down the stretch here, at least on the NFC side.
They are. The Falcons do that that gauntlet, that death march in December. Saints twice, and I think the Bucks are mixed in there. We won't pay attention to that, but yeah, they have a tough run coming up, defending NFC champs.
Well, you know what? You got a tough run coming up in January, too, and if you're going to do anything in January, you might as well be able to do it here now.
There you go. Well, let's dive right in here.
Number one.
Topic number one, that's going to be the Sunday nighter, Eagles-Seahawks, and you know, these are teams that everyone thinks the Eagles are going to do something in January, rightfully so, based on how they played this year. But I think there was a little bit of skepticism whether or not they were truly, you know, is sort of that elite class of team, considering they, you know, the schedule just hasn't been terribly challenging this year. There aren't many good teams of football this year, and the Eagles haven't played many of them.
I think you were on the Peter King conference call show last week, where that's why Jenny Franchise has been
terrible.
Sent out to the West Coast. That's Peter's theory. He hasn't played, of course. When Peter says it, he goes through the score of each game for you just to fill the time, I suppose. I didn't feel that way when he said that. I don't feel that way now. I think in the NFL, you play who you play, and they're all hard games.
Yeah.
And if you don't play well, you're going to lose.
You know, they haven't played the Vikings, they haven't played the Patriots or the Steelers or anything like that. So, those are the you put the Saints up there. You can throw the Panthers in there if you really want to be wacky about it. And everyone kind of had this game circled and wanted to see how the Eagles would sort of respond to the test. This was it felt like the first monster game of the Carson Wentz era. It felt like it. To me, it felt like it.
Yeah, you could say that. It was the first kind of pressure, show-me kind of game. And I think the story, though, I thought Wentz, you know, he was up and down in this one. He missed those two over routes. The first one that they made the big deal about, I think it was Aguilar that he was throwing to, where there was nobody in sight. And then he hit Aguilar on one of those for 32 yards, but it should have been a touchdown. The ball was off, and Aguilar had to adjust to it, and you don't maximize the throw that way. And that's what we always talk about. There's no statistic for that kind of thing. 32-yard completion, that should have been a 55- or 60-yard completion. It wasn't a great game for Wentz overall, but then he also did the spectacular a few times, and there's no statistic for some of those either. I know what was it, 51 yards or whoever it was that beat Maxwell on that play downfield.
Yeah, that was Aguilar again, I think.
Was it Aguilar again? So I guess you get a 51-yard catch on that, but even that seems to transcend that, and all these third down conversions that he's been getting. Wentz was an extreme player tonight, and that's a lot of fun to watch. And the other guy who we're probably going to talk about that side of the ball and him as well, he was extreme. If they're going to win in January, though, they need Carson Wentz to be better on a down-to-down basis than he was tonight.
Yeah, I mean, look, it felt like they didn't really go after those corners as much as maybe you would have thought. And I mean, it felt to me,
not early on. They did in the second half, but
exactly.
It felt like it wasn't part of the plan, yeah.
When they were playing from behind, they sort of changed the approach because they needed two touchdowns. But early on in this game, it's almost like they brought the game plan that they used last year when they came to Seattle, and it was Richard Sherman and Cam Chancellor and facing Jordan Matthews and company in the receiving corps. But I was surprised by that.
I was too, because I watched that Niners-Seahawks film from last week, And what stood out was Seattle's secondary was not very good in that game. And it got totally obscured because Seattle's defensive line dominated a subpar 49ers interior offensive line. And then you had C.J. Beathard, and he wasn't having a great day. He wasn't seeing the field very well. So nobody noticed. But I was sure that when the Eagles put on that film, and I'm sure they put it on 10 times, they saw a lot of opportunities and thought we could be licking our chops here. These backup corners are in. I know Shaquille Griffin was back tonight, but it's still Maxwell. It's still McDougal back there. That's not the same Seahawks secondary, and yet it took Philly falling behind in order for them to attack downfield. I was surprised we didn't see more of the plays, kind of like the Aguilar over route, those designer plays to go downfield. We didn't see that as much as I thought we would.
Yeah, and you know, I guess when you step back, they were still right there in that game. I mean, you know, Wentz loses the fumble in the end zone. That's obviously a huge turning point. That you know, it's a mistake, but it's, you know, it's not necessarily being outplayed or outmatched or anything at that point. It's your fumble, and it goes out of the end zone. And boy, that I'm still. We don't need to do 40 minutes on the non-challenge, but I'm stunned that play wasn't challenged. The Russell Wilson lateral wasn't challenged.
In real time, it looked to me like it was a lateral, no question about it. And then when you slow it down in freeze frame, it's a forward pass, no question about that.
You know what you have to tell yourself, though, when you watch in real time, whenever there's a lateral like that? He's coming full speed, so the ball should look like it's going like way backwards if it's truly a backwards or lateral pass. I thought it was immediately forward just watching in real time.
Did you really? I was the other way. I thought, don't waste a challenge on it. And I was wrong. That's a tough one. How about Russell Wilson in this game? If we sat here and ranked the top 10 quarterbacks right now, Gary, and we've done that before, I don't know if Wilson makes my list still. But if we say who's the most valuable player in the NFL this season, I've had Brady 1, Wentz 2. It's not even close to me at that level or whoever's behind them, except until tonight. I think Russell Wilson now enters the conversation. Even though I have a lot of problems with the style of quarterbacking, I think it leads to an inconsistent offense. I think you get more good than bad, certainly, with Wilson, and the things he does are so unique that some of it is just stylistic prejudice on my part, and you have to take a step back and realize this guy does everything for that team.
He does, and it's fun to watch, and I tried to take that out of the equation, but it's working. I mean, they're scoring points, and they can't block anyone. They're running the ball a little bit better now that they've sort of plucked Mike Davis, their eighth running back, out of nowhere here. But
we'll see how that holds up. I mean, Davis was inactive at other times too recently.
He worked
well tonight, and he played well, but let's pump the brakes on whether they found their running game yet.
They found a little bit more than they had when it was Eddie Lacy sort of running into someone's back and falling forward for half a yard every play.
Okay, I can live with that.
They upgraded on that. But, Wilson he's just piling up play after play at this point. And I had circled when we did our midseason awards and all that stuff at the website. I had kind of jotted down, like, you know, the two guys who can truly make a run at Brady here, I thought, or the Brady-Wentz class, was Wilson and Dak Prescott, because their teams had sort of crumbled around them. And it was sort of a test of, okay, what's going to happen now? Are you going to crumble along with the team, or are you going to elevate everyone? And you've sort of seen both of those guys go in two different directions. And it's, I don't want to sound like a bashing Dak Prescott, because what's going on there is a really difficult situation. But, you know, you'd also say if the Seahawks, you know, had put up 9 points tonight, you'd understand why.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's an inherent inconsistency with that style of play. And we're going to say that every week. And the thing to remember is inconsistency means good and bad, not just bad and a kind of other form of bad. It's ups and downs, and there's an inconsistency within the game too. That's why they've had so many second half comebacks, because they're not very good in the first half.
Yeah. Well, what? Just stepping back real quick and looking forward. How do you feel about the Eagles at this point? They've slid out of the top seed in the NFC, and in all likelihood, they will not have the tiebreakers over the Vikings if those two teams finish with the same record.
Yeah, so the road to Minnesota will go through Minnesota.
That is correct.
Sure, that will be very old within a week or two once if that gets established.
Heard it here first. We said
you
it.
You heard
first.
It here first. I feel the same about them. I think, you know, their pass rush still got home. Russell Wilson did the spectacular a few times, but you're not going to play Russell Wilson every week, and he's not going to do the spectacular every time if you play him again. Wentz will be better. The running game still worked relatively well early on. At least it got going on the third series there, and that's against a really good Eagles or Seahawks front seven. I feel fine about Philadelphia. Sometimes you lose in the NFL. You know, Seattle's a good team, too. They have good players. They have high-paid guys. I think sometimes you just lose. Didn't New England lose a good Sunday night game around this time to Seattle not long ago?
They did, 2016, when we were all a little bit younger. Exactly 1 year younger.
Yep. Yeah, no, I like them still. But I guess the team we're about to talk about, maybe that's the discussion. How do we like Seattle when we compare them to Minnesota? How do we like Philadelphia compared to Minnesota?
You know, the one other thing about not going after those corners early is I thought it was something of a confidence builder for Seattle. I don't want to put too much emphasis on the sort of the psychological aspect of this because, you know, sometimes just Russell Wilson does things and you win a game and it didn't really matter how you were feeling as far as your personal confidence goes. But I mean, that's their weakness, and when they can get away with it for, you know, 2.5 quarters, 3 quarters of a game, it's a pretty nice bonus for them. And I guess we forget with Seattle. I mean, I had been sort of counting them. I've been so high on Atlanta, I figured the Falcons would never lose again, so I've just been counting Seattle out at this point because of the problems of the secondary. But they get the Rams at home. They can still win the NFC West pretty
Sure.
I don't want to say pretty easily, but there's clearly a path there.
Well, the secondary is not a strength like it used to be, but it doesn't mean it's a weak secondary. It's probably an average to slightly below average one, but it's got Earl Thomas in the middle of it. That tends to stabilize things. And it's got a tremendous front seven, one that can generate pressure with only your front four. So the question is, does Chris Richard, their defensive coordinator, keep playing the same way with the secondary? They didn't do as much man coverage last week against San Francisco either. And it's hard to know in this game watching TV without charting the plays, how much man, how much zone. But it felt like they didn't have quite as foundational a man-to-man again tonight, but I think it was more than a week ago. My sense is they're trying to figure out what they can play with that secondary still. Can we play man-to-man the way we have been? What do we have to hide the corners? They've been playing too deep a little more than they usually do. That's unheard of in Seattle. All that stuff is getting sorted out, but that's the nature of football. You sort that stuff out as you go along. In the meantime, you still have that front seven you can rely on, and that's why you're able to mix and match and experiment on the back end rather than just play cover two all the time, because you've got a front seven that you can dictate the terms of engagement with.
Yeah, I mean, this was big. This is one that they were not guaranteed to get. They still have to go, along with hosting the Rams, they still got to go to Jacksonville, still got to go to Dallas, and Dallas at that point will have Ezekiel Elliott back in the lineup. So still a you know, a bumpy road coming up for the Seahawks, but this was a big one. This was a good one for them.
Number two.
Let's go into topic number two, and let's talk the new number one seed in the NFC, that is the Minnesota Vikings. They go down to Atlanta, and this is kind of how we expected the Vikings would win games once they had lost Sam Bradford and once Case Keenum was under center. I mean, it was a Keenum was fine. He didn't make any mistakes, and the defense, I don't even want to say overwhelmed. They don't give up big plays, and then every time they need a play, they get one. The Falcons were 1-for-10 on third downs, and that's also very early season Falcons as well, so maybe some of those problems rearing their head at this point for them. But yeah, Vikings just chugging along.
Yeah, and I think they're the favorite for the Super. I've thought that all season since Aaron Rodgers went down. And I think we had Minnesota, Green Bay as our championship teams. I know I did. Did you have Minnesota in your championship equation at the front of the
year? Yeah, I had Minnesota over New England.
Okay, so yeah, so see, wow, you are a proverb there.
I am. profit.
A profit, I guess, is what I would mean, right? Did I say proverb? That's not,
proverb.
That's not right.
They also write
edit,
proverbs.
Yeah, edit that out, so. Gary. You might call him editor on that. Help me out. It's the defense. That's a great defense in Minnesota. We forget they've been together for 4 years now. This is their fourth season under Mike Zimmer. There's something to that. There's something to having a lot of talent, which they also have. They got, I think, 7 or 8 former first-round picks. Many of them were their own first-round picks, so guys who've been in the system for several years. And then those guys have all been playing in the same system under Mike Zimmer for 3-4 years now. That matters. You play faster that way. And especially when you've got the speed they have at safety, Harrison Smith, Andrew Sendejo, who is the poster child of how defensive players especially can play better when they have great players around them. You can elevate, you can play faster because the guys around you give you more freedom. And Sendejo's a fast safety. Smith's a fast safety. That's right up the middle of the defense. That's the thing the quarterback has to deal with first. And then you work your way in. They have linebackers who can cover. Most teams don't. And they have a pass rush that doesn't need the help of a blitz. They can beat you off the edges. Danielle Hunter and especially Everson Griffin, who has the best bull rush in the NFL. So that's the formula. That's what everybody aspires to have. And this team can do a lot of stuff. They're very good at their foundation, which is cover 4 and cover 2.
Yeah, and as far as Atlanta goes at this point, like I said, I mean, look, this is in their own building again, and you know, they were so tough in the Georgia Dome last year, and it's just not coming together, and maybe it'll be another year, kind of like it was year 2 under Kyle Shanahan when they really broke out here. But they're on the outside looking in, and they have a steep climb with home and home of the Saints left on the schedule. So,
well, and see, if I'm Dan Quinn, then I don't say anything about outside looking in. I say, guys, we control our own destiny still. We're 7-5. I believe they were 7-5 at this time last season when they went on to win the NFC. So I wouldn't hit any sort of panic button at all in Atlanta.
All right. We'll see how it goes. I've been driving the Falcons bandwagon for the past month, and now I am ready to barrel roll out of there.
Well, maybe pull over, gas up, and see how you feel after a week or so. Who do they play
all
next
right.
week? They got the Saints Thursday night,
they control their destiny so much, they can, if they sweep the Saints, they can win that division.
Right. No, absolutely. The NFL's smart to schedule stuff this way.
They are.
A lot of teams have, there's probably more divisional games in December than any month in the history of the NFL. I bet that, someone can look that up if they want. It's a smart scheduling job by the NFL this season.
It is, except for the fact that Falcons and Saints have to play on a short week here. Somebody has to. I know. They just got to add the extra week and do the bye week teams play Thursday night, and everyone wins. You can start doing Wednesday night and Tuesday night, make it like a 24-week regular season with lots of
buys. That'll get the ratings right up.
Number 3.
Saints and Panthers. This was sort of a strength-on-strength type of thing here with what the Saints did offensively today. It was the run game, and they won. You know, this Panthers defense has been Panthers overall, they've been dominating time of possession and using their power run game with Cam getting more involved with his legs again this year. And this was, the Saints flipped it on him. Saints had the ball for 33 minutes, and it was 148 on the ground, which doesn't look tremendous, but it was 5 yards a carry, and they were all sort of, it was all sort of power yards, and there was, it wasn't a lot of it wasn't one of those games where it's like you have the 270-yard runs. It was a lot of quality sort of grinded out yardage here.
Mark Ingram did have the 172-yard run, so if you take that out. Yeah, correct. but it's something, what you're talking about is a sustainability still. Even if you take that out, I know the numbers go lower at that point, but the fact that they're able to run the ball consistently, or at least feel comfortable handing it off again and again against Carolina, staying relatively on schedule, that's a big deal. That's not an easy Panthers run defense, not at all. And the New Orleans Saints are in the discussion for best offensive line in the NFL this year. In fact, if Armstead weren't so injury prone at left tackle. He's been in and out of the lineup all season. They've had to move on just Pete back and forth between tackle and guard. He plays tackle when Armstead's hurt. When that line is healthy and it's those starting five in there, that's probably the best line in the NFC this season. I think Dallas is a more talented line, but Dallas has not had a great year.
Yeah.
Not as consistent from game to game. I don't think they've been as consistent as New Orleans has. That's a really balanced offense because they have a really good and forcing offensive line.
Yeah, and I mean, the other thing for the Saints today, no Marshawn Lattimore again. They did have Ken Crawley back, so they had one of their starters at corner. But, you know, this was in this matchup, it just wasn't – it wasn't exploited as much. I mean, the Panthers just don't, you know, they don't attack the outside the way Cam's been throwing the ball this year, you know, like a team like the Rams did last week to New Orleans.
Yeah, the Rams will line up and force you into matchups you don't like. The Panthers are trying to become that, and they're not there yet. And McCaffrey is the flexible piece. That's the guy they move around and do stuff with. That's a process. That's an ongoing process. And the only way they're going to survive, and by that I mean still win, even while they're trying to figure out exactly who they are offensively, is if their base running game works for them. Because we know that that's at the core, that is what they are. And that's how they're built to play, and Cam Newton's a big part of that. You know, Newton had his numbers today. He was productive running the ball, but you're not getting the Jonathan Stewart productivity. 11 carries, 45 yards. That's good. That's far from great. McCaffrey, 6 for 16. We're not seeing them command games with their base ground game the way they did back in 2015, and that's really the only difference between this team. You could argue the defense is better this year than it was in 2015, but the running game to complement that defense has not been as good.
Yeah. Yeah, let's keep it in the NFC, well, not the NFC South. We're already done with the NFC South. We are keeping the NFC South with topic number four.
Number four.
I was thinking Packers, but they played the Bucks today, so
yeah.
We're not going to talk much Bucks, though.
Bucks are NFC South. I have little miniature helmets that I display in my football room here at our house, where I put the matchups up each week, and that's what I refer to all week long. And I just loved putting the Bucks helmet across from the Packers helmet. That I felt like I was 15 years old again. These teams that used to meet in the old NFC Central many years ago, it was fun seeing them play. They played at Lambeau too. All the better. Remember the Warren Sapp, Brett Favre games?
Yeah, I bet. Which Bucks helmet do you have?
Oh, the new. I always have the new one. All the newest helmets. So I ordered, who changes here? Detroit changed their face mask, so I ordered a new Lions helmet. I like the helmets to be up to date. But I've got the old stuff. I don't have the old Bucks because I bought these helmets 7 or 8 years ago. But I have all the recent old helmets, which don't look vintage or anything now. They're like the big smiley dolphin one on the Miami Dolphins. That I've got those kind of helmets all stored away as well.
That's where it's at. We used to put them on, you know, you used to get the one game. We'd always get, where I grew up, it would either be Giants, Patriots, or Jets, and you put that helmet up, and you put their opponent up there, put them on top of the cable box, and you're all set for the day. Except then you had to watch
Did you have helmets?
You had to watch the early 90s Patriots play.
Did you actually have helmets, though?
Yeah.
We
had all the little gumball vending machine helmets.
Yes,
yeah,
I loved those as well.
These are
the adult gumball helmets.
Yeah.
These are real man. These are like twice that size.
Because I had the two older brothers, so we have like just 1,000 of those helmets. We have college helmets. We got everything sitting around in my parents' basement right now, which they're thrilled about since none of us live there anymore.
I loved going. I know we got to talk real football in a second, but I loved going down. When I was 6 or 7 years old, I loved going down to it was Payless at the time, and you'd put your quarter in, you get your little helmet out. And I was trying to get the whole league. I was a big Cowboys fan. I never got Dallas. And one day, this guy running a charity for kids, and I was with the YMCA, and that fell under his purview, and we all got to go to a Boise State game. He brought along a bag of all those little helmets. He had everything. And you would think like, oh, I'd be joyful. Okay, you loved it. And in fact, to get me to behave, he offered me the Cowboys helmet. I was being disruptive, I guess. And if I was going to not be disruptive, I'd get the Cowboys helmet at the end of the night. It took all the fun out of it. It was like the first time I felt like mature disappointment with the world at that age, like at the basic level, at my soul, because the fun was the hunt for the helmets, and he just came along with all of them.
You were such a moody little jerk, being disruptive until you get gifts, and then being disappointed with a gift.
You know what I did that night, too? I threw licorice on the field into the end zone. They weren't playing. Like, it wasn't there. I just wanted to see if I could get a piece into the end zone. They were on the other end of the field. And I did. We were in the end zone seats.
Like a Twizzler or like a little...
A lot of Twizzler, yeah. It had to, yeah. Yeah, so 8 inches,
Andy.
Maybe.
Oh. Those are amateur athletes,
I still got
Andy.
The helmet.
Have some respect.
I still got the helmet.
No, but I get it. I get it.
That was the 90s, so BSU was Division II or whatever they were, too. That was really amateur.
Yeah. That's when UConn was Division II, or they were 1AA. We used to wait for the ball to get kicked on extra points because it would just come right out into the street, and you just be hanging out there. You didn't have to be at the game. You just get a ball, and then you would try and outrun
security. That's exactly how it was here. That's exactly how it was at the Boise State back then.
Anyways, with that segue, the Packers and Bucks played. Look, let's start with the Packers. It was a little bit disappointing. They scaled everything back for Hundley. I mean, we were all kind of, for the second time in 3 weeks, we were all kind of like, oh, Hundley might be turning a corner here. And they just came out and sort of did, it looked like a Saints game plan. It was a lot of, a lot of throws behind the line of scrimmage.
You think the Saints play that way?
No. When the Packers played the Saints.
Oh, when the all right.
Back
yes.
when it was like, and anytime they ran any routes that were further than 5 yards downfield, it was Hundley looking to run and moving the ball that way, and ultimately it worked. They won the game, but it was just a little bit of a bummer. They were looking for some sort of evolution with him.
And Hundley's longest pass I'm seeing here is 14 yards, which is what it was in the Saints game as well. I remember that because it was a really neat play to Randall Cobb that the Rams actually recreated and beat the Saints with on a version of last week. So maketh the world go round. But this tells you how they feel about Brett Hundley, that the game plan was reflected this way, because the Bucks are as predictable as any defense in the NFL. They line up in zone. They keep the guys in the same zones all the time, and you can really manipulate against them, and they don't have any kind of pass rush to make you pay, and that's the only way you can survive with that kind of zone coverage. And that's why Tampa Bay, among other reasons, that's the main reason they're 4-8 this year. So this is survival mode. And the Packers also, if I'm a Packer fan, part of me wonders if, hey, maybe this is like guarantee or assurance that Aaron Rodgers will be back, because this feels like survival mode with Hundley. If they're not building anything into the game plan with the Bucks, then they're probably not planning on building anything with Hundley at all, which means they have 1 week left of this experiment, and Hundley's done an okay job keeping them above water. I don't think they match up particularly well to the Browns, so I wouldn't just give Green Bay the victory there. But one down, one to go here in this little stretch as we wait for Aaron Rodgers to come back.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was thinking while I watched this game. And Rodgers is all signs point to him coming back. He's throwing again, he's practicing again, and he'll be back for the Week 15 game, it sounds like, barring any setbacks. But it just seemed like, Mike McCarthy heard that news and was just kind of like, oh, just gotta hold my nose and draw up a couple game plans for 2 more weeks. And it was scaled back, and they were kind of fortunate to get out of this one. It was actually Aaron Jones, who had been out for a couple weeks, ended up winning it with a 20-yard TD run in overtime on his first carry of the game. So yeah, they went run heavy, lots of Jamal Williams in this one, and just lots of short throws, and they sort of just outlasted a bad Bucks team. And now Green Bay is, look, they can get to 10-6. They beat the Browns, then they have 3 games with Aaron Rodgers back, and I guess it's going to be interesting down the stretch after all.
Well, and it looks like they'll have a bit of a base run game to rely on. If you can run against Tampa when they know you're going to run, that's an accomplishment, because those linebackers, Quan Alexander and Levante David, they are as aggressive in run defense as any two linebackers in the NFL. They are gap shooters. So that's a feather in the cap to go out there and run the ball against a defense like that when you're not doing a lot with your passing game.
Yeah. All right, Andy, before we move on, a quick message for our listeners out there. The holiday season is upon us, and I'm sure many of you are stressing about what to get Andy and me for Christmas this year. We have an idea for you. the gift of an iTunes review. That's right. Subscribe if you haven't already, and then leave a review on iTunes, also known as Apple Podcasts. It is a great way to help other people find our show, and that's what we would like. We would like more people listening to the show. If you've already left a review, then just tell your friends to try out the show. And if you don't have friends, tell a stranger. Just let someone know that you listen to our show and you enjoy the cut of our respective jibs. And if you don't like the show and have just been hate listening all this time, keep your stupid face shut, because we don't need those sour lemon vibrations at this time of year. So please, leave us an iTunes review.
The cut of our jibs. I Googled that term at length the other day because I saw the Bill Belichick quote, or not quote, but the video of him in the press conference after the Chargers game. And on thebiglead.com, the headline said, Bill Belichick did not like the cut of this guy's jib. And it was a reporter that asked a question. Belichick didn't think it was the brightest question. And the response was just perfect. It was hilarious. And I didn't know what cut of the jib meant. I knew I loved it as soon as I saw the video, because I thought that's exactly what not liking the cut of a jib would look like. But I don't actually know what the term means. Do you even have a definition for it?
I don't have like an origin for it. I think it has something to do with, doesn't it have something to do with something nautical? Isn't it jib something nautical? I mean, I can look it up right now. I mean, I use the phrase all the time. If you like a fella.
If you're listening to the show, just Google, first of all, Google the MMQB. And then after you do that, Google thebiglead.com. Belichick cut of jib, and just go watch the exchange with the reporter. The reporter asked him he said, Coach, this game was played primarily in the teens today. Is that a style you're comfortable with? And Belichick said, what are you talking about? And he said, as a lower scoring game, do you prefer to play that way? Belichick said, and you know, he's going to deliver it better than I am. He said, we prefer to win the game. And then he gave the guy the cruelest shrug you could give. Like I don't know what to do with a question like that. And it was just and the guy was leaning back in the chair. And that's my guess, is that's why Belichick didn't like him, because he was not sitting up respectfully at all he would at a press conference.
And you just, if you're going to talk to Belichick, you got to ask about special teams. That's all he wants to talk about.
Yeah.
Jones did that whole story on it for us. He did a nice job with that.
I actually read almost all of that story by Jones.
It was an awesome idea.
He probably put a lot of work into that, gathering everything that Belichick has said on special teams publicly for 15 years back, I'm guessing, and it was lengthy. How many words was that? 5,000-6,000 words, I bet?
Yeah, it was like four or five.
Yeah.
No, it was a lot, and it was interesting. It was interesting stuff. But Andy, I did, in the meantime here, I was right. Yeah, the jib. It's in the 17th century, the shape of the jib sail often identified a vessel's nationality, and hence whether it was hostile or friendly. There you go.
That headline was great then. That's a great headline by thebiglead.com.
Everybody, this is Dwayne Johnson, and I'm here to tell you about a new documentary podcast series titled What Really Happened, narrated by award-winning documentary filmmaker Andrew Jenks in coordination with our company, 7 Bucks Productions.
Muhammad Ali saved a man from committing suicide.
I got the whole world.
In 2007, Britney Spears' life became a train wreck.
Next thing I knew, all her hair was off.
Was Michael Jordan pushed out of basketball because of his gambling problem?
You know, I'm doing fine. I'm strong mentally, I'm strong physically.
Did any of these happen the way we were told? I'm Andrew Jenks, a documentary filmmaker, and along with executive producers Dwayne Johnson and Danny Garcia, I go on a rogue investigation.
This series will look deep into the unknown sides of historic news stories and then ask, what really happened?
You can subscribe and listen to What Really Happened now on Apple Podcasts or wherever you get your shows.
Number 5.
Ravens and Lions. Man, the Ravens. Joe Flacco was good in this game. I haven't said that in quite a while. Flacco was good.
You know what they did? They threw on base downs, first down, second down. They threw out of running formations. They got the best play was Mike Wallace. I think it was about 60, 65 yards around there, somewhere between there. Got matched up on Glover Quinn, who's a good player, but he's a guy who's got to be coming downhill, not in backpedal mode, and certainly not against Mike Wallace with a clean release. They got that matchup simply by putting Wallace in the slot and running him on a deep post, and they did play-action rollout to set up the timing. Interestingly, Wallace was in the slot to the boundary side, not to the field. So the ball was on the left hash, and Wallace was in the left slot, which should tell right away, tell a guy like Glover Quinn, something's up, because that's not a formation you see from very many teams and not from Baltimore. And Wallace got him deep. And that was symptomatic of how the game went. They got Flacco comfortable by putting him in throwing situations on base downs, and Flacco finally started rewarding them by attacking downfield. And that's the profile Baltimore has to have. They're a running team. That doesn't just mean you hand the ball off all day. It means your passing games also derive from your running concepts. And if they do that, they've got a chance. If they don't, they're going to be inconsistent week to week like they have been. Not even inconsistent, just plain underwhelming. Today was a good day, though. A really good start for this final quarter stretch for the Ravens.
It was, you know, how much of this was exploiting the fact that Tavon Wilson was out for Detroit and they were, you know, shuffling some things on the back end?
Well, Wilson's an important player for Detroit. And Miles Killebrew, second year player, fourth round pick a year ago. You know, he's had an okay season as a dime player. He's had better than okay in a limited role, but they don't view him as an every down player. And actually, what they did in this game is they moved their slot corner, Quandre Diggs, to safety in nickel situations, and then brought in their second round rookie Taz Tabor, who's been getting a little bit more repetitions each week. So that's a lot of change for Detroit.
Yeah.
And Diggs, actually, from what I could tell, he played pretty well, but it's still a remade secondary, and you're still talking about Detroit's probably their most versatile guy. I think Quinn is great, but I think Wilson is the more versatile guy at this stage of each man's career. That's a big loss for them. You're right. And Detroit, factor in their run defense, which has not been good in the second half of the season. And that's you could almost say that's a downtrodden Lions defense as a whole now.
Yeah. And I mean, look, Matthew Stafford left this game late with the injury to his throwing hand, and we'll see how that goes. But this seems like it was something of a death blow for the Lions at this point. They're not in the AFC. That's the way it goes. But Baltimore, I mean, Baltimore is probably going to the playoffs at this point, and they are, you know, they're going to have to win ugly anyway. I mean, this isn't, you know, this isn't anything surprising to anyone. But this was encouraging. This was really encouraging for Joe Flacco, because I thought it might have been coming off the torn ACL last year. Maybe he didn't trust the knee completely, and you know, he still got the brace on it, and it's still. It still twists around every once in a while when he slides, but it was like the same this year. It didn't get any better.
Yeah, he's a different quarterback. I don't know what's gotten into him, and it doesn't help that they haven't found an offensive identity around him, and his receivers have underachieved, but he's the common factor among all of that. So, this is encouraging. They've got the Steelers next week. That's a tougher defense. That's a much faster defense, if nothing else. Their schedule's manageable from there, but, you know, I wouldn't just pencil them in. I'm actually writing about the Ravens, and I'm writing that, you know, we don't pencil them in quite yet. They're in a great position. I'm sure if they get in, everybody's going to say they're that 10-6 wild card team that nobody wants to face. You know, it's one game. They've still been very bad on offense over the course of the season. They were very good today, and they've got to build on today. And that's where you leave the conversation.
They're going to get in, though. They're going.
All right. Well, then I'll quickly finish the article and hand it in to you then.
You could have done it in 50 words.
Number six.
Let's go topic number six. This was Patriots-Bills. I mean, honestly, I don't think there was anything in this game that was unexpected as far as how it played out. The Bills were, you know, they were sturdy in the red zone defensively, and that was a plus. They moved the ball on their opening drive, and then I'm not sure what happened to Tyrod Taylor. And I say this not in like a try not to say it in a dickish way, but he threw the worst interception I think I've ever seen. And I honestly wonder if he, like, had some sort of he had done something to his ankle on the first play of the game, and I wonder if he had, I don't know, maybe just stepped in a way where it sent some sort of shooting pain up his leg and caused him to just throw this horrible pass, just gently lobbed into the hands of a Patriots linebacker. But, yeah, I guess what we're going to have to talk about is, did you end up seeing the replay of the Gronkowski late hit?
I did. I did see it. Bill Belichick's quote on it, it was BS, I'm sorry, I apologize, and I think that's got to be anybody's quote on that.
Suspension or no suspension? If Goodell calls
absolutely.
You tomorrow,
absolutely.
You think absolutely suspension?
If you suspend Mike Evans for what he did to Lattimore a few weeks ago, where he came up and pushed him, which I thought was a suspendable act, if that's one, this should be two.
Yeah, you think that was worse?
Yeah. Hmm. Yeah, the full weight of it, he for one, Gronkowski, he revved up, and then he used the full weight of his body, and he went high to the shoulder neck area to a defender who is already on the ground. So he knows the ground becomes a weapon as well as Gronkowski. It's as dangerous as it gets. It was done in utter malice. Is it out of character for Gronkowski? Yeah, absolutely it is.
Yeah.
But that doesn't matter. That's irrelevant. You go out and kill a person, it's out of character for you, you're still going to get charged. So I think he ought to get two, and then maybe there's an appeal process and you have a longer discussion about it. But you can't have this in full. I mean, what if Tre'Davious White had gotten injured on that? Then what's the I mean, how bad does that look for the NFL, and how bad of an outcome is that for everyone involved?
Well, White did leave the game. He might have been already injured on the play, and I guess my argument would be, if I were Rob Gronkowski, is it's unclear if the play was blown dead at that point.
Well,
I think that's his argument.
I
still think it was filthy, and I think they should come down on him. I think is, you know, essentially for all intents and purposes, he's a first time offender. I don't think he's ever had more than a four figure fine. But yeah.
Yeah,
I don't know.
Right. And I get that. And that factors in. But to me, that's an appeal process conversation, though. I think if the NFL needs to make the statement and set the precedent, you start at two games there. And then you can work down. Because if, let's say, Vontaze Burfict does that, you want to be able to, and he would get much more than two games. Maybe we take it back a guy. You know, whoever's the next step from Vontaze Burfict reputation-wise. You want to have that precedent set where you can do multiple games. That's, I mean, if that act is, if they deem it to be intentional, which Bill Belichick appears to have, you've got to have some flexibility to come down hard on that guy, because he might be someone else next time who you do need to come down hard on.
All right. I guess I'm a softie.
I
said no suspension.
I'm not going to be a liberal.
I'm not going to be upset if he's suspended, but I thought they might suspend him because there is an outcry, and all this stuff tends to just be a reaction to, you know, what the public is screaming for, and you know how loudly they are calling for blood at this point. But I don't know. I thought it was just sort of like a nasty late hit type of deal.
Gronkowski has said he apologizes too.
Yeah,
I mean he's. I don't think it's
isn't
not
that
a dead
apology
ball,
enough?
Live ball thing. Well, yeah. Look, he's not a dirty player at all. He does everything the right way by the letter of the NFL world. You still have to deal with this, though.
Okay.
The league has to deal with this.
All right. I will keep an open mind. I said hefty.
Glad
fine.
We had this talk, Gary.
Yeah. I think we learned a lot about each other on this one. As far as this
and
game went,
and ourselves a little bit too. Really, that's.
Well, I like to think we do that every week. As far as this game goes, Tyrod ended up leaving with a knee injury. It looked serious; he was carted off, but it sounds like it is maybe not season-ending at this point. Peterman came back in and was fine. You know, it wasn't what happened in L.A., and it was kind of nice for him to face a team that maybe wasn't completely overwhelming his sort of shoddy offensive line. So, could be another quarterback change coming to Buffalo, but not by choice this time.
Number 7.
Chiefs and Jets. Alex Smith finally starts throwing the ball downfield, and the Chiefs score some points, and they end up giving up a ton to the Jets, and man, they are just absolutely spiraling here, and we have a three-way tie atop the AFC West at this point.
We do, with two of the teams going in totally different directions. We're going to talk about the next one, I believe, next. Kansas City, I don't know. What do you do? All right, let's just follow the rules that everybody set last week. Alex Smith, do you bench him? So do you bench Justin Houston, Marcus Peters, Chris Jones, Derek Johnson?
Well, kind of
a little bit. I mean, isn't that what we're supposed to do? Because that's the rule we played with for the quarterback. So who should we bench on defense? Let's start naming names and solving the problem by just pulling names out of a hat.
Marcus Peters lost his mind at the end of this one. That his behavior was strange, and I like Marcus Peters, but he was.
I didn't
being...
see the full thing. I saw him throw the flag, though. Does he warrant a suspension for throwing a flag in the stands?
It was he didn't get ejected for it, so it was a 2-point conversion. You know, whatever, the play had gone wacky, and Josh McCown throws it away, and they had thrown the flag on Peters for holding. And so he picks up the flag and whips it into the crowd. And then he knew right away, so he starts walking off. But he wasn't ejected. So he starts walking off. They have to get him because at this point it's a 7-point game. The Chiefs are getting the ball back with about 2.5 minutes to go, and it's a very good chance that they can tie the game. And then we have overtime, and then Marcus Peters has to play football again. So he came back out to the sideline, but he came back out to the sideline with no socks on. He put his cleats back on and was still wearing his pads and uniform, but he's wearing no socks. And he was just sort of talking to people in the crowd. It was all very... It was strange.
You know what? I had, and this is totally irrelevant, but I had a teammate in basketball, Jack Smith, who got one technical and decided he was ejected one time. And then I had a friend, Taylor Douglas, on that same team who handed the ball to the wrong team on an inbound pass because he lost his mind for a second. He wasn't doing it on purpose. Coach yelled at him, and Taylor's response was to take his shoes off. I never understood that, but I guess I've seen both of these, and now Marcus Peters reenacts all of my junior high teammates today.
Yeah,
that's all I got for
go.
That. I don't know how to explain that kind of thing.
Yeah, he would have fit with their team. No, I don't know. I mean, he was smiling throughout. I mean, he just had a brutal day. Chiefs' entire defense had a really rough time, and yeah, it's all sort of going wrong at all the wrong times for the team right now. But yeah, Alex Smith was better.
Overachieving offense for the Jets too. Maybe we need to mention that this offense has been putting up points, putting up yards in recent weeks. They do have an identity. John Morton, the offensive coordinator, he's doing a nice job with them. Remember, they don't have any weapons. They didn't have weapons coming into the season. They don't really have them now. Robbie Anderson, maybe, at wide receiver, and that's about the extent of it. And yet, here they are, week in and week out. You put on the Jets film, you feel like you know what you're watching. There's a semblance and a pattern to what they're doing. They're pretty well put together there.
Look, that team was supposed to be a punchline this year, and the fact that they are 5-7, and they are... I mean, they're scoring points. They're not winning games. You know, you figure if they were going to win, they were going to win 17-13 games. You know, they put up 38 in this game. They put up 30-something in the Buffalo win a couple weeks ago. They can move the ball. They can get explosive plays. They had 408 yards of offense today. So, good on them. And Alex Smith was better in this game, but he had a 70-yard run, and then it's almost like he briefly reverted back to what he had been doing, because then the next like five snaps he just looked to run again, and it was kind of like this is not going well. But they got Tyreek Hill going, big game for him, and Chiefs offense good, defense bad, so they still have things to sort out. Would have been nice to have Eric Berry this year. That would have been helpful.
Number 8.
But right now they are tied atop the AFC West. Three-way tie, one of those other teams. This is topic number 8. This is your Los Angeles Chargers. They beat up on the Browns today, and the Chargers, I mean, everything's pointing up for them.
Chargers are a good team. They've got a lot of... Keenan Allen is a top 5 wide receiver right now.
Yeah.
And I think Melvin Gordon with Eckler, when you combine them and the two things they can do, and they were on the field at times together in this game, they've got a balanced backfield. Then they've got a quarterback, of course, who can get them into all the right things. So you have multiple dimension at running back. You have the best route runner in the NFL, in my opinion, at Keenan Allen, who can play the slot or out wide. And you have two flexible tight ends, Gates, who doesn't run great anymore, but he's still part of an equation, and Henry, who does run well, and he beat the Browns several times downfield out of empty formations. You put all that together, you can line up in a lot of different ways, and you've got a field general quarterback to do it with. Then on defense, they've got those edge rushers who were quiet today, but they're, you know, that's who you game plan around. Mm-hmm. And they have a sensational cornerback in Casey Hayward, and the rest of the secondary is playing pretty well along with them.
I mean, if you were starting a franchise from scratch, you'd want a franchise quarterback, you'd want elite edge rushers, and you want to shut down cornerback, and they have all three of those things. And I mean, God, if they could only kick field goals, this team would be like 9-3 right now. They've lost three games based solely on atrocious special teams play. Like they're by a wide margin number 32 in the league as far as special teams goes, and it boggles my mind how they can be so bad at it every year, but hopefully it's turning around.
You know what today I also noticed watching this game is, and maybe it's because they were playing the Browns, maybe, but there were a lot of Charger fans at that home game. There was a little bit of a home field advantage, an atmosphere there, and it'll be interesting. If they win the AFC West, there's a playoff game coming through that soccer at StubHub Soccer Stadium they play in. That'll be fascinating to see unfold.
It's gonna be, and it would be the Titans or the Ravens or the Jaguars coming to town too. So, oh man, how many people would show up for that? Not a lot.
Well, what happens is you get LA's got so many people living there that all of the transit fans, the people that grew up in Baltimore, Ravens fans who live in Southern California, they all go to those games. So there's still someone to go watch the games. It just hasn't been Charger fans. But today it was Charger fans. And, the Browns don't win, but they have a good fan base. So I have to believe that maybe we're starting to see some Charger fans find themselves in LA. What people aren't talking about is, I don't know how the Rams are doing attendance-wise. They should be starting to sell that stadium out relatively soon, and they're not. And this is a good argument, by the way, for NFL teams that want to build stadiums, or they're arguing to the city they play in, hey, build a stadium. It changes things. The Rams and Chargers are both headed for the playoffs if they stay on the tracks they're on. They both have what we could call some form of an attendance issue. Stadiums do matter in the NFL. People want to go to the right atmosphere.
Well, look, I mean, a lot of fans out in L.A., you know, they got used to two decades of watching on TV, and then the Red Zone channel came along, and then they were playing fantasy, and I think sort of the routine became to stay home and watch football on Sunday. So,
well,
breaking people out of that takes some time.
You can go watch football out in the perfect sunshine weather, too, though. There's something
to that. Well, you can do whatever you want in that weather. Unless you're like me and you're pasty and the sun punishes you and
you got 10 minutes to do what you want, and then you gotta
then you gotta run for cover. Either that or you just walk around with a parasol all the time, just like I do all summer.
Have you noticed, by the way, did you notice Carson Wentz's photo on Sunday Night Football, and it's just, and they show him standing there in his uniform with like the graphics next to him. He's got a major tan line, which he's a redhead and he's from North Dakota. He probably doesn't spend a ton of time in the sun, but I you know what they did? Those photos are taken at training camp. I'd almost guarantee you.
Oh yeah. They got it. Yeah.
So these guys, he's a lot tanner than he is in real life on that photo there. I bet he doesn't have the tan line now.
What I noticed about Carson Wentz tonight, and I'm surprised I hadn't noticed before, I didn't know how many tattoos he had.
I saw a giant cross on his back when I saw him at a locker room 2 years ago.
He's got the cross on his back, which you obviously couldn't see tonight, but he has the big one on his throwing arm, too, when he's got the sleeve on the throwing arm, so you can't see it that well. It looks like some sort of, I'm sure, but I would assume it is some sort of religious, thing.
I hadn't noticed the tattoos either. I noticed the one on the back when I saw him in the locker room was all. But
yeah, he's got one. I can't tell if it's length of the throwing arm, but I was surprised to see that. But I did, Andy, we got to talk about one other thing from this Chargers-Browns game before we get to the lightning round. Josh Gordon. Josh Gordon played football, and the Browns weren't kidding when they said they were going to feature him.
They went to him very first play. Smart play call, too. They put him in the slot, just like the Ravens did with Mike Wallace. They knew that it would be his base slot, which means two tight ends, two receivers. Receivers on one side, tight ends on the other. You're going to get man zone indicator that way. They got zone coverage, so Jahlil Adai is on Gordon with a cushion. Gordon on a quick slant, catches it, 9 yards, bam, you're back in the NFL, just like that. Now we go play. And he did a pretty decent job. He looks a little heavier than he did, 2013 was it? Well, man, gosh, it's been a long time with him. But
yeah,
he played
like five games in 14, but...
Yeah, so he's played five games since 2013. He had a nice catch, a contested catch against some really good coverage from Casey Hayward, though. Good first game for him. That's a different offense, too, by the way. They've got Coleman back healthy, and I think he's okay. I think he's a good, not great receiver, but he's better than what they had. He's better than Kenny Britt. And then they have Josh Gordon in there. The biggest problem for the Browns all season has been a lack of wide receiver talent, and I don't think they've done a great job scheming around that lack of talent. That's not an issue anymore. They now have players who can fit the style of play that Hugh Jackson wants. The problem is, and I think this is what will ultimately limit him and his development, is DeShone Kizer is a crapshoot for ball placement. He can make some amazing throws, and then he misses too many. And you can't teach a guy to just throw accurately. So that's going to be the issue for him long term, and probably what makes him a backup ultimately. But they've got someone to throw to now, at least.
Number 9.
All right, Andy. Topic number 9, the lightning-ish round. We're going to start with the third team in that three-way tie in the AFC West. That is now the Oakland Raiders are 6-6. All those teams 6-6. They beat the Giants today. No receivers for them. Not literally, but Michael Crabtree suspended. Amari Cooper concussion protocol as well as an ankle injury was out. So they end up beating the Geno Smith Giants. It was a 24-17 game, but they were mostly in control for this one. I guess we have to talk real quick, Andy, because obviously we missed out on it during the week. Eli Manning benching. I'm baffled by the whole thing because I think maybe the front office would want to see what they have behind Eli Manning in a lost season. But if you are the head coach and you are coaching for your life, I would think Eli Manning is obviously the guy you would play because you are trying to win games.
Yeah. I hated the decision on a number of fronts. Pick any direction, I didn't like it one bit. And I don't like to hear the phrase of Geno Smith Giants either. So that team, change has to be coming because whoever's behind that decision to bench him shouldn't have their job anymore. It's symptomatic of a lot of problems going on there.
Yeah, I just do not get it. And Geno Smith was all right. I'm the last Geno Smith believer. I will go down in that flaming wreckage with Geno Smith. He's got to get a better organization to play in. 49ers Bears. This was Jimmy Garoppolo, first start for the Niners, gets the win. And he was, I mean, look, he was fine in this game. If you were excited about Jimmy Garoppolo coming to the 49ers, you can continue to be excited. If you were skeptical, you can be slightly less skeptical. His one interception was a ball that got wrestled away from his receiver, and they kicked a bunch of field goals in Chicago. Chicago, it's not easy to win in Chicago. We've seen a lot of good teams go to Chicago and struggle.
I agree. It's a hard environment to adjust to. It's a different type of field, different speed of the game. And then that defense in Chicago does a great job. They are really hard to sort out on film, partly because they got that terrible angle on their coach's film. The depth perception's bizarre, but mostly because they've got Vic Fangio, who is very good at teaching how to be blurry in coverage. Am I here? Am I there? What exactly is the coverage? There's matchup principles in their zones. It's a hard team to start your first game against for a new offense, and Garoppolo gets the win.
And Robbie Gould gets his revenge, his ice-cold kicker revenge, five field goals, 5 for 5 against his former team, all from 35 and in. Someone asked John Fox about it in the post-game presser, and he was just like, yeah, he made a lot of kicks. I mean, he made a bunch of, like, short 30-something yarders.
Yep.
Revenge game. Rams Cardinals, this was, Sean McVay was kind of playing this up as, look out, this might be a trap game type of thing. They blew out the Cardinals in London. They go down to Arizona, and strange things tend to happen there. Cardinals have won a lot of games as a home underdog over the years. Rams controlled this one, defense took over, and then the offense just continued to do its thing.
When coaches say this might be a trap game, those coaches believe that stuff. As much as you and I believe, I'm always saying, Gary, it's the NFL, you can lose to anyone at any time. Coaches believe that times infinity. And I get texts from coaches during the season, different things, just checking in. Every single time on the text exchange, they always text last or next to last and say, we got a big one this week, big game this week. And it's never, it might be true, it might not be true. It never correlates to any kind of truth. It's just what coaches say. That's how they think. So I'm sure Sean McVay lost a lot of sleep this week worrying about James Betcher and the Cardinals and all that they do and those edge blitzes that Arizona's been throwing at you with Buda Baker and Tyrann Mathieu. Yeah, it's a trap game because every single week's a trap game in the mind of these coaches.
There you go. This was a big game, and they won it. Titans and Texans. Titans keep on piling up wins. They just haven't looked particularly impressive at any point this year. They fell behind 10-0 in this one to Tom Savage and had to work their way back, and they did it very steadily. Over the course of three quarters, they end up they got a garbage time. Derrick Henry had a 75-yard run with like 20 seconds left to make it 24-13. But this was another barn burner for them. And I don't know. When I look at the Titans, I keep thinking this team, more than maybe the Jaguars, has some kind of upside left going forward. Maybe something comes together for them because they haven't been good offensively, and Mariota sort of hasn't taken that next step forward as a quarterback.
I'll watch the film on this later in the week. I didn't see a lot of this one, but you know what I wish the NFL would have done back in 2002 when the Texans re-entered the league, and this, I guess, would have been a few years before that when all the decisions for franchising were getting made. Mm-hmm. I wish you would have said, hey, Houston, welcome, we love you, yeah, come on back, but don't call yourself the Texans and pick red and blue as your colors and then be in the same division as the Titans, because for the rest of eternity, football people are going to be mixing you up when they say the name, the Titans, the Texans. Oh, I meant the Texans. Sorry, I said the Titans. I do that still, and I'm afraid to talk about this game because I, A, didn't see a lot of it, and B, I don't remember which team's freaking which because they got the same color scheme and they come from the same derivation. They sound the same. It bugs me.
Well, we're going to say in the AFC South right now, another division game. This was Jaguars-Colts, and this went pretty much how you would think it would go. Jaguars did lose in Arizona last week, so good for them getting back on track here. And, they didn't have a big day on the ground. Blake Bortles did some stuff, ends up throwing for 309 and two touchdowns. I do want to mention something about these two AFC South games. The Jaguars celebrated a touchdown with Leonard Fournette. They lined up for a free throw. Like, the offensive lineman lined up like they were on the lane, and then Fournette shot a free throw. And when the Titans got the clinching interception against the Texans, they did a layup line. Like, you do in warm-ups for basketball where someone rebounds, mm-hmm. passes to the next guy, he takes his layup. Next guy rebounds and do it like that.
How'd they get the ball back and forth on that? There's no.
There was a very confused official sort of watching the whole thing go down. And it was also like
a ball behind their head. Like, how would they do the layup?
Just on the crossbar. You just sort of toss it up there.
Were they bouncing it off the crossbar each time?
No, they were like putting it in the vicinity of the crossbar.
But how was the next guy catching it? That's what I wanted. That's hard to do.
Oh, wait, he wasn't catching it. No, it was bouncing. It was bouncing off the ground, and then the guy would have to chase it, and then it was not a crisp layup line.
Oh, that's terrible.
Maybe this is what they should do, and if any of them are listening.
A kid's basketball layup line.
Yes, a kid's basketball layup. Next time they should do a three-man weave, which would actually look a lot crisper. than the straight
nobody
up
nobody knows
play
what
point.
That is.
Three man. Oh my goodness, everyone. Knows
no,
three
I know
man
what
league.
That is because I told you I played with the greats in junior high like Jack Smith and Taylor Douglas. But I don't think a common fan watching would say that's a basketball warm up drill.
I don't know. I think that's pretty common. I think everyone had to do that. Even in, I think that's something they made us do in like gym class. It wasn't even like basketball team.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
Last game, this is Broncos-Dolphins, and it was defense scored like all the points here for the most part. This was Trevor Siemian went back under center, and it just isn't going well for the Broncos this year.
Chris Harris accused Adam Gase of trying to embarrass the Broncos by doing a late onside kick.
Oh, I did not see that.
Yeah.
Because the game was such a blowout, I ended up turning it off late.
I bet he did. I don't knowing how I know Gase, I bet he wouldn't deny it if you asked him.
Well, the fun part of this game was 35 points for the Dolphins, which included two safeties. They had two safeties.
And yet they still say they scored 35. That's too bad. That, like, if they're going to have two safeties, Peter King and I had this conversation the other day because Kalen Kaler covered a game that the final score is 2-0.
2-0, yep.
Football across America. And I said to Peter, I've always wanted to see 4-0. And he said, I would love 4-0. And he's always wanted to see it as well. We finally get a 4-point here, but it gets washed away in 35, which if you look at that, you think, oh, 5 touchdowns. So it's too bad the score wasn't a weird number, like how'd they get to that, like 39 or something, or 37, you know, where you could do the math and say, hey, wait a minute, did they get two safeties in this game? That's all
I
right.
Kinda
they'll
like
take
that.
The points.
I kind of like the secret two safeties, though. I remember back when I was a kid watching an Arizona State game in like the 90s, and they had 7 points, and they had gotten it with two safeties and a field goal.
Cool.
I like that.
Yeah,
it's a nice little present. For
okay, no, that's
reading.
Fine. That's a good case for it too. I'm fine with that. I'll watch the film on this one as well. As people can guess, we didn't. I don't know how much you saw this one. You can't see everything. I haven't seen Miami Denver, but I love that it was a blowout. I'm going to treat myself to this. Will be my Saturday night film at the end of the week next week.
Yeah, this was one that
done quickly.
I tend to start weeding out games as the afternoon wears on, and this was one that went down pretty early.
Number 10.
With that. Topic number 10, the weekly awards. Offensive player of the week. Who do you have, Andy?
I'm going to go Russell Wilson for all the reasons we said at the front of the show.
Yeah. I'm going to go Joe Flacco because I'm surprised he sort of started to get his mojo back a little bit.
Yeah.
I'm now interested to see what he does going forward. I mean, I was interested anyway, but now I'm especially interested and somewhat optimistic. Defensive player of the week.
I'm going Casey Hayward of the Browns. You know, his brother died this week, and unexpectedly, obviously, a younger brother, 27. And so he was in Georgia for much of the week with his family, flies all the way to Georgia, back across the country to L.A. to play in the game. He was there on Friday in Georgia, and he played great. So it's not a sympathy, though. It's not a sympathy vote for him, although he would earn that as well. I'm sure his teammates were very impressed with him. It's hard to do that and have the energy to go play football still. He has had a remarkable season. I mean, he deserves to be in the conversation for first-team All-Pro. I'm not saying he is, but I'm saying he deserves to be in that conversation. And it was evident throughout this game today, emotions, no emotions, he's been a great player for them.
Yeah. Yeah, a lot of breakout cornerback seasons here. And breakout being guys who went from very good to great. And, he's sort of been lost in the shuffle, but hey, Chargers are going to be playing important games on the stretch here. I'm giving it to LaMarcus Joyner for the Rams. He was all over the place today. It seems like every play in that game, he was hitting someone in the secondary. He was breaking something up, and he's getting my award.
He's got more punch in his body than anyone in the league. By pound for pound hitting velocity, he's up there. He's not this guy, but he's the closest to Bob Sanders that we've seen, at least in the NFL right now. He's the closest to Bob Sanders right now.
I was going to say, I'm a draft dork, and I remember when he was coming out of Florida State a couple years ago, and it was kind of like, oh, this 5'8 guy, you know, what's he going to do? And I mean, he could cover a little bit, and he was very violent, and it's kind of like, that guy's sort of Bob Sanders.
He's a good player.
Special teams player of the week. Do you have one, Andy?
If you don't have one,
I have one to gift to you in the spirit of the holidays.
No, I'm not taking your cherry. We've got 3 weeks till Christmas. You hold on to that.
All right.
I'm giving it to Robbie Gould. I don't know if you know this, Gary. Robbie Gould used to kick for the Chicago Bears, and he was there for a long time. He's a good kicker. He went in today in a revenge game, and he kicked five five field goals against his former Bears team. Is it that to win the game? And all five of them were within 35 yards, which I find to be pressure kicks because you should make them.
Yes. Now, that's a good point. If you miss those, then you're a real choker. You're kicking them from 55. No pressure. No one cares if you miss. It's a good point,
yep.
Andy. That was a good one. I will give it to I'll give it to Tariq Cohen. He had a crazy punt return in that game where he fielded the punt and ran sideways backwards for 30 yards and then looped all the way around and ran for a touchdown. But I want to give an honorable mention to Taysom Hill, who is the Saints' number 3 quarterback, and they had him covering kicks today. He did the Joe Webb thing, and he ended up having 2 tackles on kickoff returns, and it was just funny seeing the dude with the number 7. And Joe Webb wears 14, so he still looks like a wide receiver out there, even though he's a I don't know how the Bills list him. They used to list him at a QB/wide receiver on the Panthers roster. But Hill has the number 7 on, so it looks almost like a second kicker is in the game. Running down the ball and trying to tackle guys. And by the way, if you ever have a chance to see Taysom Hill play quarterback, Andy, you will hate him so much.
He
played at BYU. He is Tim Tebow. He is like the exact same guy.
Okay. Yeah, I was not a big Tebow guy back in the day. One time I was watching film at my dad's office. I don't know why I was in there, but I was using, he had really good internet connection. I needed internet that day. And a tenant next door came by and said, "Oh, you watching Tebow?" I said, "Yeah." And she goes, "Oh, do you love him?" Or whatever. I said, I was trying to be polite. And she goes, "He's really inspirational, isn't he?" And as soon as she said that, I thought, this is the type of person you smile and nod at until they go away. I said, "Yeah, he is inspiring. You're right about that." He was a really inspirational guy in his early 20s. Who couldn't throw a ball.
Yeah. Well, this is what he could have been doing,
football,
covering kicks for the Saints.
I guess he's a baseball player. Yeah. Are we going coach of the week? I don't want to go. Can I go back to Dallas because of some of the changes they made?
Yeah. We've done that. Yeah, you can do Thursday.
Okay, I'm going to go Matt Eberflus, who's their passing game coordinator, defensive side of the ball in Dallas. Because I bet he was partly responsible for putting in Kayvon Frazier, taking out our guy Byron Jones. Can you believe Byron Jones is losing some snaps now? I would have never guessed that. But it looks like it makes sense. They've got to get some size in their opinion. And the change to Frazier ignited that secondary Thursday night against Washington. Matt Eberflus is the guy that does a lot of their passing defensive stuff there in Dallas.
I don't know about that. The whole Byron Jones reduced role thing
cuts to my soul. Could you agree to this though? That's a bold move to take your most talented player off the field for a rookie, and then the rookie rewards you by really standing out and dominating really in run defense.
Fair enough. They need more UConn guys is what they need down there in Dallas. My coach of the week, I'm giving it to Todd Downing, who's been under fire all year. He had to go out there today. No Crabtree, no Amari Cooper. They're leaning on Marshawn Lynch a little bit more. Lynch had his first 100-yard game since 2015, 19 more touches in this one, and Carr wasn't great. He got away with a couple of really bad throws, but they dialed up. They got the Cordarrelle Patterson screen game. I was sort of waiting for that in the entire game. They pressed the button at exactly the right time with that. So Todd Downing, been under fire, did some nice work today. Got a win they had to have. So.
Love
That's
it.
What we got.
That show's over. Lightning round.
It is
again. Way too long. Way too long.
Well, we got. It's it's the full 16 game slate now, so we got more games in the lightning round.
Yeah,
it's the way it goes. Endurance. It's a game of endurance. Thanks as always to producer Shelby Royston and Lou Pellegrino, as well as editor Chris Basil. all those guys at Cadence 13 always make us sound so good every week. But most of all, thank you to you guys for listening to this episode of the MMQB 10 Things podcast. Honestly, you are the best. We love getting the feedback. Let us know what we're doing well. Let us know what we're doing wrong. I assume you all want us to define cut of jib every week because that was a lot of fun. Andy_Benoit, gRambling_SI on Twitter. We're both on Facebook, or you can email talkback@themmqb.com. Remember to listen and subscribe to new and archived episodes of the MMQB podcast with Albert Breer, the MMQB podcast with Peter King, and this show, the MMQB 10 Things podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, including the MMQB.com, SI.com, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, TuneIn, and other podcast providers. We will see you guys next week.
Tip of the hat to Albert, another strong edition of MMQB. Did you know your favorite team has a daily podcast on the Locked On Podcast Network? Steelers fans, we have you covered with Locked On Steelers. Cowboys fans, it's Locked On Cowboys. And Chiefs fans, it's Locked On Chiefs. You get the picture. Search Locked On, your favorite team. Search on Apple Podcasts or Google Podcasts for Locked On, your favorite team. Or tell your smart speaker to play podcasts Locked On, your favorite team. Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.